like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal. Talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning, this is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss, and before we proceed any further, I want to say a big thank you to Bev Capshaw for delivering yet another stellar edition of Talking Animals in my absence last Wednesday. As for today's edition, my guest is James Terry, the Hernando County Animal Services Manager, who will be helping oversee the mega pet adoption event taking place May 17, 18, and 19 at the Hernando County Fairgrounds. And when they say mega, they're not kidding around. The event not only spans those 3 days, but as many as 700 cats and dogs from five counties will be offered for adoption. Plus, these animals will all have been spayed or neutered, vaccinated, and microchipped. And there's something else notable about adopting at this event. But if I mention it now, it could be akin to posting spoilers about Avengers Endgame. But that detail will be revealed shortly when I discuss various aspects of the Mega Pet Adoption event with James Terry in a few moments here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Later in the show, I'll talk with Lori Wolf, a wildlife photographer and artist who lives in the area I do, Jupiter Farms, Florida. She often shoots in a huge, gorgeous park nearby and elsewhere, and her photos of all kinds of animals are stunning. Her recent photo of an eastern screech owl in her nest with a baby duck went viral, prompting the National Geographic to run the picture along with an accompanying story about that photo and about Wolf. That conversation will be a bit later in the show. Right now, though, let's get to James with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. This is James Terry on Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, James.
Good morning, Duncan. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals. And boy, when it comes to this mega pet adoption, many elements of it truly do seem mega. The ambition, the number of counties collaborating, the number of animals available for adoption, and so on. So lots of logistics and planning involved, I'm sure. But tell me how the initial idea came together.
The initial idea came together. I'm part of a regional directors group, and we all meet and get together, and we discuss, you know, how to better help our animals, help our citizens. And Hillsborough County has a lot of great folks over there in their Pet Resource Center.
Sure.
And one of them came from Jacksonville, and they did a similar event years ago in Jacksonville when he was there at Scott Trebatowski with Pet Resource Center.
Great. And yeah, Scott's been on the show. Yeah.
They had been discussing it and wanting to do something locally here, and really the venue was kind of the challenge, is setting up a venue and getting access to it. And, you know, as part of being part of this group, I knew that Hernando County had a great relationship with our local fair board. So we reached out to them and asked if they'd be willing to donate the fairgrounds to hold the event. And they jumped right on board, were willing to help. So all of the directors and, you know, from Pasco, Hernando, Polk County, Citrus County, Humane Society of the Nature Coast, and then, of course, Hillsborough's Pet Resource Center, we all got together and decided we're going to move forward on it. And we're really fortunate enough, too, to get some sponsorships from Best Friends Animal Society as well, which was fantastic.
Yeah, well, we'll definitely get into that, because that's certainly a key component of the event as well. But so, if I follow you, James, that given that sort of alliance, once seedling of the idea got mentioned, it sounds like it was always going to be those five counties represented. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
There was a couple others that were, you know, Pinellas is part of the group as well. and Pinellas just logistically and distance and so forth. They've been supporting us along the way with ideas, but they won't be bringing the animals.
I see. I got you. Now, with something this sprawling and with five counties and people like yourself that are animal service managers and stuff, who's in charge? I mean, it just seems like something this sprawling, it's great because hopefully it's going to be super effective in terms of adopting out tons and tons of animals, but it also can't, something like that usually can't be run by a committee. So how does that happen in terms of making decisions and arriving at here's how we're going to do this and here's how we're not going to do that?
Well, what we've done is we actually had our group come up and we held our last regional meeting here at the fairgrounds. So all of the directors who are involved and their support staff were able to walk the fairgrounds, and we just basically all got together, roundtabled the ideas, looked at the logistics. We had some support from Hernando County Parks Department that had some overview pictures and sizes of all the buildings. So we all were able to get together and just kind of culminate a plan and, you know, kind of divvy up different assignments. I'm taking care of the assignment of the fairgrounds logistics here and the parking, and then other folks been taking care of the assignment from Pet Resource Center as far as working with Best Friends and other sponsors.
So it all sounds very cooperative and very easygoing, because I guess the larger mission is like, hey, how can we get a bunch of animals adopted? So let's just, whoever's got to do whatever to get that done, let's do it.
That's exactly what it was. And this group is tremendous. All of the directors will drop anything to help one another at a moment's notice. And whether it's an event or just daily operations, you know, it's very blessed to have so much cooperation regionally here.
For sure. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is James Terry, Hernando County Animal Services Manager. And we're discussing the mega pet adoption event happening May 17th, 18th, and 19th at the Hernando County Fairgrounds, offering upwards of 700 cats and dogs for adoption. If you'd like to ask James a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663, email dj at wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So given all that planning, and I know we're still a couple of weeks away, part of the reason I wanted to do it in advance is so that people, we could alert people now, but also the archive of the show will be up and for the next little while, so people can, who haven't had a chance to hear it today, can hear it and hopefully alert more folks to get their adoption shoes on and get out there on those days. But tell us exactly how the mega pet adoption will work that day. I mean, maybe even sort of take us through the day. So let's say I arrive at the Hernando County Fairgrounds on the first day, May 17th. Not sure what kind of animal or animals I'll adopt, but knowing I've got my eye on adopting at least one that day, what will it look like? How will things be structured and presented across the fairgrounds?
What we're going to have is we have allocated three buildings at the fairgrounds, very large buildings, including the auditorium. So the auditorium will be set up with dogs, and obviously there'll be volunteers and staff there available, and the dogs will be in crate, and they'll be available to take the animals out of the crates for interaction. So we have two very large buildings set up for dogs, and we have another very large building set up specifically for cats. Mm-hmm. And so obviously anybody who wants cats, we can direct them to the proper building, and anybody who wants dogs, we'll encourage them to walk through and, you know, make sure that they find that pet that's going to be right for their forever home, and it's right for the pet, it's right for them. We're looking for those great matches.
And then within those buildings, James, let's say, just taking the dog buildings for a moment, are they arranged by breed or by size? So, like, I imagine, like, if someone's kind of thinking, well, I just for my little apartment here, I really kind of need to go like sort of Chihuahua size or whatever. And someone else might say, hey, I'm a Great Dane person. Does that get laid out that day?
They really won't be separated by breed at all. I'm sure there'll be separation of size to a degree, just based on logistics of where we can fit the, you know, that large amount of kennels.
Sure.
And to make it easier for the citizens coming in and looking around, but nothing breed specific. It's really going to be about them, you know, taking an opportunity to look at everything available. And you know, we find a lot of times people come in looking for one thing and they fall in love with something else.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. And again, with the incredible array of choices there, I would think that will very likely happen repeatedly over the course of those 3 days. So back to my hypothetical. So I've looked around, I've been through those buildings, and I kind of hit it off with a cute pit mix and feel like, hey, you know, this dog might be the one for me. And then I've got to hang out with it, with one of the volunteers or someone there kind of taking it out of its crate and walk around a little bit. So at that point, do I fill out an application or other paperwork, or what happens at that moment?
Yes, you would proceed with filling out an application. And, you know, there'd be obviously a series of questions. And one of the primary questions we have there is, are there other pets?
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that's very important. We'd like to get out to people. If you are planning on bringing your pet, we would ask you to bring someone else with you to be able to handle your pet. Because to keep all the animals as calm as possible, we don't want people walking through with the pets through all of those animals. But we're going to have an area there to kind of stage.
Okay.
That way, what we would do is encourage a meet and greet. If you find something you really love, we'd encourage them to do a meet and greet. We would take our pet out, have an opportunity and a place set up for you to introduce your animal to ours and just make sure they get along. And as long as they do, then we can proceed forward with the adoption.
Okay, well, that's really interesting, and that sort of anticipates another question I had, because somehow I didn't imagine, given the sheer size and scope and number of animals that would be presented for adoption, that there would be the opportunity to bring animals from home. So yeah, one of my questions in my mind at least had been like, yeah, so I hit it off with this sort of hypothetical pit mix I'd mentioned, and then would I be able to take that potential new dog home to meet the dog that does live at home? But it sounds like what you're saying is that scenario, that they will be allowed to meet those dogs on site, and assuming that there's no issues to speak of that can be recognized at least immediately, that then the adoption could proceed.
Yes, and that's very important, because it's not good for animals to be returned and brought back. We want to really make sure we get it right the first time, get a good fit.
Yeah, that's great. So in a quintessential case of burying the lead here, we're only now mentioning the adoption fees, or perhaps I should say more accurately, the lack of adoption fees. So talk about the waived fees and how that's made possible.
Well, I'll tell you, it's made possible through tremendous partnerships with our group. We have Best Friends Animal Society is our primary sponsor. They immediately, the moment we started discussing this, jumped on board and said, we want to be the primary sponsor for this. We want to make sure we can make this a free adoption event. We don't want money keeping anybody from getting a pet. So they were able to provide resources in which they'll reimburse agencies a small fee for each animal. And then we also got a substantial sponsorship from Pet Resources Foundation Incorporated. Same thing, they're sponsoring adoption fees, and Best Friends is also providing opportunities for heartworm treatment and prevention as well for any of the animals that may have that. So this is absolutely going to be the best time financially to come and adopt a pet, because right now this is all about getting pets in the right home and getting animals adopted. You know, it's not about money for any of us. It's about making good pairings and helping the animals and helping the people find great pets.
Yeah, and of course, as we did mention in the introduction, all the dogs and cats that are available at this event will have been spayed or neutered, vaccinated, microchipped, and then you have this waived fee thing. Anytime something like this happens, there's this philosophical debate usually surfaces about, well, if someone doesn't pay anything to adopt that animal, there's some concern in some quarters at least that the concern they have for that animal or their likeliness of taking care of them, or if they're not able to pay, one argument goes, if they're not able to pay the fee, what's going to happen when something arises medically and they're going to have a vet bill? Will they be hamstrung in a sense? So there's a lot of questions that tend to swirl around that I'm sure you guys deal with day to day, especially when there is something like this that does allow the adoption fees to be waived. But any responses just to some of those things, which I'm sure you've heard countless times over the years?
I have heard those, and you know, not to delegitimize it, it's something definitely to think about, but, you know, I always fall back on it, you know, one, that you're going to talk to the people, and you get a good feel, and I think any of the shelters, if you feel like they're not able to take care of the animal, you're going to deny the adoption. And the other thing that's pretty much standard in the shelter community is almost every shelter will take back their animals that they adopt out. So if something were to come up and it just simply the people didn't have the means and couldn't do it, there is always a fallback option of being able to take the animal back and then readopt it out.
Yeah.
We obviously don't want to do that, but, you know, there are some fail-safes in place for those situations.
Right. So I guess it'll be clear, even though this is a collaboration amongst the five county animal services. So, again, back to my sort of hypothetical pit mix that I've kind of been drawn to and think I'd like to proceed with. So it'll be clear when I'm at that crate and when I take that dog out and get to know it and sort of fall for it and say, hey, yeah, maybe I would like to take this dog home, that it'll be clear that, for example, that that dog is from Hillsborough or somewhere, so that God forbid if there is an issue or something I didn't check out fully with the animals at home or whatever, that if I do have to return it, I know exactly where that animal came from on the day of the mega pet adoption itself.
Yes, sir. Everybody will be provided with paperwork from the facility that the dog came from, and there'll be no miscommunication with that at all.
Yeah. I mean, it just seems so, again, the number seems so big and sprawling. I assumed it would probably be clear, like, which organizations and counties they did come from. But
I'll tell you, one of the things that helps with that is many of the shelters are actually closing down their shelter for the day because they're bringing pretty much all of their animals here. And they're also, each shelter is bringing their own staff to care for the animals.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, you know, you're able to handle it because you're dividing up. It's a big number, but you're dividing up, and each agency is really just dealing with their own number that they're used to as it is.
Sure. Yeah, it's like combined forces, but otherwise it's just like a given Saturday might be at one of those shelters.
Yes, sir.
And also, I guess that further enables them to kind of suss out, spend more time with the potential adopter, because as you say, I mean, most people that work in shelters or volunteer in shelters have a, you know, develop a kind of a good sense of this seems like a good fit, or this person seems like, yeah, we'd want to send home this dog with. And conversely, if there's something that makes them wary, I guess to not allow that adoption to go forward.
Oh, yeah. And then sometimes it's a matter of, you know, helping people, you know, kind of find the right pet. Sometimes they have the wrong idea. You know, typically we have that come up when, you know, we may have somebody that has some physical limitations and they come in and they want a really, really strong, very young, hyper dog. And, you know, we have concerns maybe that the dog maybe pulls a little too hard on a leash or something, and we don't want anybody getting hurt, pulled down, et cetera. So we work really hard to make sure we talk to people and say, you know what, maybe it's better to have more of a calmer dog that's got a little more leash manners right now, because we don't want any people getting hurt either.
Yeah, that makes sense. Let's make sure this really succeeds and sticks, right?
Absolutely.
So that there's no turning back if we can avoid it. So here's a question that came in by way of email. Will there be any tabling for nonprofit animal-related groups such as Florida Voices for Animals, in this case, I guess, that are not selling products?
Yes. What we have set up through the fairgrounds is we're going to have vendor space available. They can contact Hernando County Fairgrounds to get vendor space. And the way it's set up is anybody who is not selling products, who's a nonprofit,
mm-hmm.
will be getting a free vendor space available based on, you know, how many we can fit.
Yeah.
And then anybody who wants vendor space that is selling products, then they would have to pay a vendor fee.
I see. Okay. And so they just contact the Hernando County Fairgrounds. There's probably somebody that's coordinating those spaces at the fairgrounds.
Yes, they have several staff over there, and all of them are prepared to help out and set vendors up as requested.
Okay, great. Again, this is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. I'm speaking with James Terry, Hernando County Animal Services Manager, about the Mega Pet Adoption event taking place May 17th, 18th, and 19th at the Hernando County Fairgrounds. There may be as many as 700 cats and dogs available for adoption at this event over those 3 days. So if you would like to join the conversation, ask James a question about the event, about the animals, about the kind of question we just had with the tabling, etc., you can call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or text 813-433-0885. So I guess with an adoption event this massive involving hundreds of animals, the obvious hope is that an enormous number of cats and dogs will be adopted. So given the folks that you said had some history with this, is there any way to project approximately like what sort of numbers? I've been quoting the 700 or up to 700 number that will be potentially available for adoption. Is there any ballpark number or target number that you guys collectively have set that you hope at least or would reasonably expect would be adopted from that 700?
You know, that's really tough to say because this area has never had something like this before.
Yeah.
I know that what they've done in Jacksonville, though, it was they would have probably 1,000 animals, and it was not uncommon for them to have 800 adoptions.
Wow. Okay. So huge, huge percentage typically. And then I assume that the animals that, for whatever reason, sadly, don't get adopted adopted over the course of that weekend, they just go back to their respective shelters.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Because one question, you know, when I posted about this the other day on social media, one question that somebody had raised is, you know, whatever animals don't get adopted, do any of them face being euthanized? Which I thought probably would not be the case. They would just go back from where they came. But I just wanted to ask that on behalf of the person that asked that on my social media post.
No, sir. This isn't any type of a last, you know, chance effort or anything like this.
Yeah.
This is all animals available, so it has no effect on that whatsoever.
I suspect as much, but I just thought that might put at least a few other people's mind at ease who might have had the same thought that this person who posted that comment did. So, James, well, this sounds really good. What else would you like us to know about the event or anything else that people should be aware of when we're still a couple weeks or so away from it? Any other key details that we should be sure to mention?
Well, one thing that we did get worked out today is the last piece that we just got fall into place is we're now even able to offer free parking.
Oh, wow.
So we're going to be able to have not only free adoptions or waive fee adoptions, but we're going to have free parking. And, you know, there's going to be some vendors here that are going to be having some good food and everything like that. So
mm-hmm.
People don't need to rush. They'll be able to get, you know, purchase some food off some of the food trucks and vendors that, you know, typically work the fair and so forth. And some of those have some really tasty food. And, you know, and I'm sure there'll be some other nonprofits that come. And, you know, we'd like the community just come together and get as many adoptions as possible, come and be educated and really see what it looks like for many different agencies coming and working together because, you know, everybody has budget concerns. Everybody has, you know, limited resources. And in today's day and age, with that affecting everyone, you have to have teamwork and you have to have collaboration. And I think this was going to be a fine example of that.
It sure sounds like it, James. And also on a parallel point, if people have been saying, you know what, really start thinking about adopting or maybe someone has lost an animal in a recent period and thinking, well, are we ready? Are we kind of ready? I mean, it just seems like for various people, this seems like a prime opportunity if they're anywhere near thinking that they're going to be adopting an animal in the near future. Again, just the sheer number of animals by way of choice is pretty impressive. But also the other things, the fact that, again, they're all coming spayed or neutered and vaccinated, et cetera, chipped. And again, the waived adoption fee. So, I mean, it's hard to think of a better opportunity if you're close to thinking, yeah, I think we're about ready to adopt now. I mean, it's May 17th, 18th, and 19th. We head out to the Hernando County Fairgrounds, and that's your moment, probably.
Absolutely, and there's no way that you're going to find a better selection. As you use the word choice, you're not going to find a better choice. You're certainly not going to find a better value, and I have a feeling that you're not going to find a better atmosphere either, because I'll tell you, we have an amazing crew here at Hernando County Animal Services. Our volunteers are awesome. Our staff's awesome, and every one of the other agencies I've been to, it's the same. Great people coming together for a great cause. It's going to be fun. It's going to be successful. It's going to be great.
That's cool. All right. Well, we just have maybe a minute or so left. In fact, I want to get a caller on the conversation. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with James Terry. Hello, it's you.
Oh, hi, how are you?
Did we lose you? Oh, maybe we did. Shoot. Okay. Well, I thought we had a caller that was holding that I wanted to include. But all right. Well, James, well, thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals. And again, I think people, there's any number of ways people can find out more information, certainly yours and presumably the other county animal services shelters, Facebook pages and or websites can, you know, get more details about like the times. In fact, I probably have somewhere here the hours, because again, it's as a further way to sort of make this very enticing to adopt. Yeah, so Friday, May 17th, the hours over there are 12 noon to 6 p.m. The next day, Saturday, May 18th, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. And then Sunday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. So a lot of potential time to go by whatever you're doing that weekend, and people are busy on the weekend. But so that's great, James. And again, people can contact Hernando County Fairgrounds if they have any thoughts about trying to table it there or be a vendor out there. So, James, this has been great, and we wish you big success for all the folks that are teaming together on this, and we'll just hope that a gigantic percentage. Why not shoot for all of it? Let's hope that all the animals are adopted that weekend. Why not? So
let's do it.
Okay. Well, thank you again for joining us today on Talking Animals, and again, good luck with the event.
All right, Duncan. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. In a few moments, I'll speak with photographer Lori Wolf about her extraordinary shots of wildlife, including a recent image that went viral before ending up published in National Geographic. Wolf is also an artist who turned some of her photos into paintings and other pieces of art. Right now, though, it's time to step into the comedy corner. This is Sean Donnelly, one of the comics who performed last week at the wildly successful Moon Tower Comedy Festival in Austin. I'm slightly biased. With a piece called I Love My Bulldog in today's comedy corner on Talking Animals. On WMNF.
I kind of have a kid now. We have an English bulldog. Do you guys know what that is? English bulldog? Yeah. If you know what an English bulldog is, those are dogs that are really fat and they're low to the ground. They have breathing problems. They go, arr, arr. I just got the dog version of myself. That's basically it. I just wanted something else unhealthier than me in my house. I don't know if you know this, but bulldogs, English bulldogs, they're very stubborn dogs. Did you know that? They like to pull you when you want them. And I spend all day with my dog, so sometimes I forget my dog's a dog, and I talk to him like he's a human. You've ever had a dog? You know what I'm talking about? And the other day, I'm walking him, and he's pulling me, and I get so upset. And out of nowhere, I just yell out, I go, you think you call the shots? Well, you don't. I call the shots. And then he pooped. And then I picked it up. I was like, all right, you definitely call the shots. If you're in a relationship with somebody and you pick up their poop, they call the shots in that relationship. I love my dog so much. I wish he was human. He'd be the coolest guy in the world if he was human. He'd be the kind of guy, he could crash his car, he wouldn't, you know what I'm saying? Do you know how many times I've hit my dog in the head with a door? And he's just like, yeah, it's totally cool. Don't worry about it. I love you. Let's go do something else. We'll go to a diner. I don't care. I love you. It's me and you. You can't do that with cats. Let's face it, everybody. Cats are dicks, okay? It's true. Cats are dicks. I hate cats. Yeah. If cats were human, they would just be like your really uptight, skinny friend, Beth. That you can't say the word moist around, you know what I'm saying? That's why you have cat people. You need cat people. There's only two types of people in this world, cat people and gun people. Because a lot of people don't like those two things. There's no other animal that has a group of people associated with it. There's no lizard ladies. Right? There's no lonely women in their apartments with lizards knitted on their sweaters. Also, why is that? Why is the cat the symbol animal for the lonely woman? So everywhere in the world's ignoring you, so you get the one animal in the world that's going to ignore you as well?
That was Sean Donnelly with a piece entitled I Love My Bulldog, taken from his album Manual Labor Face. Now it's time to talk with photographer-artist Lori Wolf, who produces striking images of assorted wildlife, including a recent photo that went viral featuring an eastern screech owl sharing her nest with a baby duck. The photo caught all kinds of attention, including from the editors of National Geographic. We'll hear about that in a moment. But right now, here's Lori Wolf on Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Lori.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks for joining us on Talking Animals.
Thank you so much.
So let's just jump right in. When did you start taking pictures?
Kind of all my life, but seriously, the past about 5 or 6 years.
And so at least those last 5 or 6 years, was it primarily a prelude to your artwork, to the painting and other?
Yes, it was to gather reference. For paintings.
I see. And then, so to talk a little bit about that art, first your paintings, and then I'm also really intrigued by these wild eggs.
Wow. Well, painting is something that has just always come naturally to me. Didn't study it in school because my parents said I had to study something serious, so it's just come naturally.
So what did I have to interrupt and ask, what did you study based on that mandate from your parents?
My mom picked physical therapy.
Oh, wow. Okay. So are you a physical therapist or have you been?
No.
Or? Okay.
Nope.
I see.
Dropped out because I wanted art.
Okay. I'm still doing what I had in mind, Mom. Sorry. I did try. Okay. Sorry. Carry on with your story. I just was curious.
That's okay. So the painting I just did kind of off and on my whole life, and then once my husband retired, I really had some more time to pursue it. And so we started running around doing the photography, and the photography has been wonderful for the paintings, but it's taken on a whole life of its own and has become a huge love.
Well, so how long have you lived in Jupiter Farms?
30 years we built.
Oh, my goodness. Wow. Okay. Yep. So I'm guessing part of what drew you was the proximity to wildlife that's obviously been important to you for most of your life.
Well, it's funny because we like the country lifestyle, but the wildlife, even though it's always been a love of mine, I'm kind of maybe like a lot of people. I didn't really open my eyes to what was truly around me until we really got out there and started taking pictures. And honestly, was kind of surprised at how much there is right near us.
Well, I have to say, kind of almost as a second wave from that, living in the general area that you do, I mean, I see your photos posted and I think, holy cow, because some of these things are just like at this park that's pretty nearby.
Right,
and I'm thinking,
right.
Wow, I mean, I knew there was some cool wildlife there, but I didn't know there was all this. And so
yeah.
it is eye-opening sort of once removed just by looking at your photos.
Right, thank you.
Yeah. So walk me through what it's like on a day that you do go out shooting. First of all, what time do you start typically?
Our schedule is crazy. We go to bed at 6 and we get up around 2 a.m.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, because a lot of the places we go to, I mean, we stay within central to south Florida.
Yeah.
Like the Everglades and Keys. But sometimes we have to drive up to 4 hours to arrive at sunrise because sunrise is the excellent light and it's when the birds are active. And so it can take a long time, you know, to get to the location.
And then how do you decide, okay, tomorrow we're going to go to the Everglades? Or, I mean, is it just sort of random or just, hey, we haven't been here in a few days or a week or two or whatever. Should we just go to the Keys? Or, I mean, how do you determine that?
It's really watching the seasons of the different wildlife.
Mm.
You learn that over a few years of doing it. Like summertime is good for the Everglades and the West Coast when the shorebirds are nesting. Middle of winter and spring is for when the migratory ducks and lots of other birds come through here. So you learn it's by the seasons. It's by the seasons of what's out there.
And then within that, then are you, based on what season it is, are you saying, okay, when we go out tomorrow, I'm particularly going to, ideally at least, capture cool images of this, this, and this?
Yes, basically.
I know you aren't out shooting largely, so you're available to speak with me this morning, which I appreciate. But what's the next day that you'll likely go out shooting?
Well, we actually went this morning back to Riverbend.
Oh, okay. So, wow, you actually did go. Well, yeah, I guess going as early as you did, you could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So what did you see and what did you capture?
We're looking for a pair of twin fawns that we know are there, but we have not seen. Actually, I saw one of them last week.
Mm.
And this morning, there were twin barred owl babies. We have at least two sets of those, but they're pretty grown now. They're still being kind of fed by mom, but they're getting on their own.
So I guess that I could see how if you're going regularly to someplace, especially if it's close by to your house in this case, then you really get to know like who's
right.
out there and who's what babies are around and who's growing up, and you really probably
right.
get quite familiar with the cast of characters.
Right. And then you did ask, I'm sorry, I didn't really answer your question. Our next outing is probably Blue Cypress Lake, which is a little bit west of Vero Beach, and that's where tons of ospreys nest, and this is the time when that's going on. So,
and do you?
And we take our kayaks there for that.
Oh, wow. And you're taking shots from out on the water, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so when push comes to shove, would you say that, hey, if it's a bird, I'm particularly happy to shoot it? Is that like kind of your preference versus, I mean, I even posted today some cool shot of a deer and some other things, but it just seems like...
I think there are just more birds around.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah, I mean, I would love, a lot of people see bobcats. I'm not lucky to see those and get to photograph those. And,
right.
You know, I love deer and those thankfully are nearby us. So I would photograph pretty much any wildlife.
But yeah.
Birds are prevalent, so.
Right, and I was going to ask about that because, I mean, just where we live in Jupiter Farms, there's a dedicated Facebook page, and periodically, especially lately, people have been posting just regular, not professional photographer-type shots, but just things that mm-hmm. they've seen of bobcats.
Yes, well, unfortunately, a lot of the people out here who have chickens, the bobcats are attracted. We don't have chickens.
Yeah.
So that's kind of been a problem out here. But, yeah, there are bobcats, and we hear there's foxes out here, and we just haven't seen them ourselves.
I know, that's so interesting, right, that you go out on these specific missions to shoot stuff, and there's stuff ostensibly, I mean, literally, if not figuratively, in your own backyard, but you're not typically seeing those just because, you know, at that point, at 3 a.m, you're somewhere else probably.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then I guess, really, speaking of pretty familiar areas, there actually is some stuff in your own backyard. Tell me about the boxes that you have in your backyard.
We have four nesting boxes. They're actually wood duck nesting boxes, which we bought as kits and we put them together. And last year was the first year we had them up.
Mm.
And we figured, okay, it's going to take a year or two for things to really find them. No, it didn't. It took, the screech owl was here for the first time last year, right after we put the box up. I guess the timing was good. And she moved in and had one baby last year. And the other boxes have just attracted, well, squirrels have nested in there,
okay,
too. But wood ducks and woodpeckers are messing around with them, and flycatchers, just everything. They're magnets for bird nesting. It's wonderful.
And what specifically, as far as you can tell at least, attracts them? Is it just that it's kind of an enclosed space, that it's protected? I mean, what appeals to them?
Yes, I think so. I think because, you know, their nesting areas are being, you know, built over and trees are torn down, and I think they're having a harder and harder time finding places to nest.
Yeah.
And the boxes really help out a lot.
Yeah, so they're kind of looking around for some place to hang their hat, and then it's like, hey, this is already pre-made for us. Why not?
Right.
Let's move in. All right, well, this may bring us then to the now sort of famous photo, your shot that did go viral. So I know you've told this story a few times, but I hope I can ask you to recount at least briefly how that striking image and images really came together.
Well, the end of February, my husband actually is the one who saw this first part happen. There's a box on the east side of our yard, and he looked out that window one morning from upstairs, and there was a female wood duck with her head sticking out of the box hole with a large egg in her bill. And he was astonished. I mean, it's like, you don't expect them to ever do that sort of behavior. You know, we know they go in there and they lay eggs. But she proceeded then to fly out of that box with the egg and across our yard toward the west, where we have this other box where the screech owl eventually had moved in. And we didn't see actually where she went, and didn't think too much of it after that. And like I said, that was the end of February, probably like the last day of February. And then March, maybe 1st or 2nd or so, we noticed the screech owl had moved in to that box. And it's the same box she used last year. So that nothing really happened. You know, we would see the owl every so often and, you know, figured she had eggs in there. And then all of a sudden on April 9th, I was in the kitchen. It was around 4 p.m. and I saw something fuzzy disappear down from the box hole. And I thought, oh, we have an owlet. Oh, that's so wonderful. We'll have to really keep an eye on this box during the evening, you know, before it gets dark, because it was already 4 p.m. And so we kept an eye on it. And the next thing we see is around 6 o'clock. And that is the famous picture, the infamous famous picture now with the screech owl sitting next to the duckling. And I still don't even really believe it happened.
It is kind of a mind-blowing image, right? I mean, so to actually walk out in your backyard and see that, I can only imagine how much more like, oh my goodness, really?
Yeah, it's totally unbelievable, but it happened.
Yeah. And so then, obviously, you captured that image. And then what's the first thing you did with the resulting photo?
First thing I did was send it to a friend, one friend.
Yeah, okay.
Friend.
Yeah, can you believe this, right? Yeah. Yeah.
But I did post it on Facebook right away.
Right. Yeah.
But I posted it on
Was
my
it the Jupiter Farms page, the first, or was it somewhere else?
I probably posted it on both my personal page and the Jupiter Farms page
okay.
that
yeah.
evening.
Yeah.
And I don't usually put anything public on my page.
Okay.
And a bunch of my friends saw it and said, okay, could you please make this public so that we can share it with people who aren't? And I was like, okay. So I made it public. And in the meantime, I think the act of making it public on my page, plus a friend on the residence page who happens to be with Audubon, contacted me and said, could I post this on the Audubon Facebook page? And I said, sure. So between those two things going sort of public, it just all kind of snowballed. NBC and CBS contacted me, and then National Geographic, and then it just went nuts.
Yeah. So can you pinpoint a momentum shift? Was it like after the Audubon thing, or was there something else where you thought, oh my God, it's just exploded now?
I have a feeling the Audubon thing got a hold of most, you know,
yeah.
a attracted the most attention, I think.
Yeah. Probably. And then what was it like when, for someone who's spending this kind of time and really gotten more and more serious, it sounds like, about photography in recent years, what was it like when National Geographic contacted you?
Bizarre.
Yeah.
I mean, something, you know, you don't ever think anything like that will happen to you. And, you know,
yeah.
It's thrilling and just, yeah, sort of otherworldly. Like, did that really happen to me? You know,
yeah.
Now I look back.
Well, there's sort of a running theme, like, because seeing the image itself sitting out there in your backyard, it's like, well, I can't quite believe what I'm seeing, yet it's happening. And then you took the picture,
right.
And then people went bonkers for it. And then also probably a little bit surreal was National Geographic saying, hey, we want to run the photo and run a story on you, which I thought was made it kind of extra cool.
Yeah, it was totally cool. Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, in the wake of that, I mean, you'd already had all this kind of response at CBS and NBC and people just kind of responding generally to this incredible photo. Did it take on yet another level or leap of some kind after the National Geographic and the photo, of course, with that piece ran?
It's kind of leveled off a bit.
Okay.
I still hear from places far across the world saying, could we have permission to run the photo and the pictures and, I mean, the photo and the story. And, it's kind of leveled off. But, yeah.
Okay. Well, I also, for people listening, I should say, if they didn't already see that last night, I posted the exact photo we're talking about, with your permission, of course, on Facebook page. So it's the Talking Animals Radio Show page, a WMNF bulletin board page, and my own personal page, if you haven't seen this image somehow yet and you want to see exactly what we're talking about. So how did you feel in that piece, the National Geographic piece, being described as an amateur photographer?
Now, why are you picking up on that?
Well, no, I mean, I just thought
it's
because...
It's funny because a bunch of people said that to me.
Oh, really? Okay.
They were all up in arms about it, saying, they shouldn't have called you an amateur, and, you know, all of this. And it did bother me a bit because the man that I spoke to there did not mention that. He just said, you know, do you want to be known as photographer artist, photographer painter? And I said, either one.
Mm-hmm.
So then it came out with the amateur word. And he explained to me later that unless you're working for National Geographic, that is what they call you.
Well, that's a pretty high bar to only be affiliated with the National Geographic, especially.
Yeah,
yeah, I guess why I was kind of like, I mean, I don't even know you. This is the first time we've spoken, obviously, but I was kind of up in our just because, again, because I do live in Jupiter Farms, because I do see the Jupiter Farms Facebook page, and therefore I'm lucky enough to see all the stuff you post pretty regularly, I'm thinking, amateur photographer, what are you talking about? Have you seen her work?
Oh,
you know?
Thanks. So, I would have preferred, they didn't have to call me professional. It would have been nice to just be photographer.
Photographer, right. Yeah, well, that's one that doesn't necessarily have to be modified, but
right.
Yeah. So,
but, you know, it is what it is, and it was still a thrill. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, what a great place to be, even with a slightly odd tag there to describe you. But so we just have about maybe one or so minute left, Lori. But and again, this is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'm speaking with Lori Wolf, a photographer who specializes in wildlife. And as we just noted, a recent photo of hers went viral, and then it was published by National Geographic, along with a story about her and about the shot that she took. So chances are that most people listening to this show are pretty serious animal lovers, but as photographers, most of us don't have the equipment or the talent that you do. So can maybe you give us a sort of iPhone-wielding actual amateurs some tips for shooting better pictures of animals and birds? Not, I mean, first of all, I'm probably not going to get up at 2 a.m., which is right away sets me at a disadvantage. But just any basic tips that people that are just like love animals and maybe not doing quite as good a job capturing their pictures when we have the opportunity?
Well, you have to really, really be quiet, and I would say your ears are as important as your eyes when you're trying to locate critters, because they're going to be skittish for the most part. And then as far as technically taking pictures, obviously you want the light behind you as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Do not be shooting into the sun because you'll get a bunch of silhouettes. When you get to get the best depth in a photo, you don't want If you can, you know, you can't always make these decisions depending on where the bird is sitting, but you don't want a busy, busy background, and you can get a lot of depth if the bird is sitting like on a branch and then the background itself is far behind, and then you'll get a shot where you'll have a blurred background and the bird will just pop in the front.
Mm.
So that really helps give shots a lot of depth. But like I say, you can't always, you know, depending on the where the bird is, you can't always manage that. But yeah, other than that, just getting
just keep
out there.
Doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I didn't have any lessons in this. I'm
self-taught.
I started out as a painter and, you know,
yeah.
just so if I can do it, I think the other people can do it.
Okay. I can only assume that you probably have some pretty good cameras and lenses, though, at this point.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, we shoot with Nikon, my husband and I, and I actually use a prime lens, which that is one tip I could say. A zoom lens, a prime lens is a one fixed focus. It's always going to be sharper because it's better made. It's got more glass in it than a zoom lens. And I shot with a zoom lens for a couple years and was addicted to it. And my husband kept saying, you need to go to a you're going to be happier, because I kept saying, why do you get sharper pictures than I do?
Okay.
He said, because I use a prime lens. So, yeah, so that, it does help a lot. And you can always zoom later on the computer because you're getting the quality, you know, in the shot to begin with.
Oh, right. So, yeah, you can effectively do your zooming later on.
Right.
Yeah.
Later
oh, that
on.
Makes sense.
Yep.
Yeah. Cool. Yep. All right. Well, Lori, well, thank you so much for making the time to join us on Talking Animals. And congratulations on that photo. Again, having seen a lot of your work before that, I know other great photos already, of course, exist and other, you know, striking, if not viral photos, I'm sure will be around the corner as well, especially for someone who's willing to go to bed at 6 p.m. and get up at 2 a.m. That kind of dedication is rewarded, obviously. So
I guess so.
All right. Well, thanks again.
Thank
Take
you.
Care. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Coming up at 11 on WMNF, it's Rob Lori with Radioactivity, extending this four-hour block of interviews, phone calls, news, and more, including in the noon hour midpoint with Nola Lele. Then at 1 p.m., John Gilmore presides over executive session. Then the music kicks back in at 2 p.m. with Scott Elliott and the All Souls edition of It's the Music. Meanwhile, on today's show here on Talking Animals, the prize for Name That Animal Tune, I'll be offering a Talking Animals t-shirt of some vintage or another. So it is time to proceed to Name That Animal Tune, which is a giveaway. So please only participate if you haven't won something from WMNF in the last 90 days. And there will be a prize, again, as I say, a Talking Animals t-shirt to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals on WMNF.
Like a bird on the wire, like a drunk in a midnight choir, I have tried in my way to be free. Like the worm on a hook, like a night from some old-fashioned book, I have saved all my ribbons for thee. If I have been unkind.
Maybe we'll even take a quick guess on the air just to spice it up a little bit here. We've got a few folks who seem to maybe know. So. Hi, you're on Talking Animals. You're live on the air. Can you name that animal tune?
Bird on a Wire, Leonard Cohen.
Of course. Boy, you sounded like, geez, this is so obvious. It's give me something a little more challenging. But, yeah, you are correct. Congratulations. What is your name?
Emily.
Okay, I'm going to come back and get your information and send you off a Talking Animals t-shirt. Congratulations. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
We have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. I invite you to visit talkinganimals.net, our website, for audio archives of every show we've ever broadcast. iTunes podcasts are available there as well. There are also links to our Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram. Follow me on Twitter, all those places. And there's simple links on the Talking Animals website page to do any or all those things. You can also subscribe to our e-newsletter to find out about our guests a couple of days beforehand and other scintillating news from the Talking Animals headquarters. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. This is WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. Rob Lori is up next after NPR News headlines. Thanks.